And top of the morning, top of the week. This is We Ourselves. I'm Ambrose Eileen Sr. On Friday, we began a two-part series. We raised the question, was 9/11 the result of an inside job by our government or by someone connected to people at the highest levels in our government? Over the past several months, I have been honored to have Dr. Judy Woods share with my listeners her important scientific findings. And today, as well as on Friday, another great mind, Andrew Johnson, came all the way here from England. And both are in our studios today to share their views on this issue. Now, what would be the purpose of our government or people at the highest, or someone connected with people at the highest level in our government committing such an atrocious act? Well, its purpose is to create the nationwide emotional response that enabled our government to mislead us into invading Iraq. Iraq and Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with what happened at the Twin Towers. And so we've had them to discuss this issue and to expose to the world the scientific findings by Dr. Woods. And I promised you on Friday that we would make them available to you for your questions, because we didn't have a chance to get to your questions on Friday. Now, on Friday, before I get to that, on Friday, both Andrew Johnson and Dr. Woods discussed a concept that we haven't talked about before, called the Hutchison effect. So this morning, before opening up the phones for your questions, although you can go ahead and call and get in line, the number to call is 588-0893 or 202-588-0893. I would like to ask Andrew to tell us in as simple terms as possible about what the Hutchison effect is and to introduce another guest that's on the line. Andrew?
Thank you very much indeed, Ambrose. We're really honoured to be here again, and glad that we have this opportunity to display this information before the audience and hopefully get them to look at it, evaluate it, and I think they will come to the conclusion that it's very important information. And I will try and start with answering the description that you asked me to give, and I've got something here to read out, which is relatively short, and then we're going to go over to John to get his take on this. The Hutchison effect is a collection of phenomena which were discovered accidentally by John Hutchison during attempts to study waves made by Tesla back in 1979. The Hutchison effect occurs as the result of radio wave interferences in a three-dimensional zone-space volume radiated by two or more high-voltage sources, usually a Van de Graaff generator and two or more Tesla coils. The results are levitation of heavy objects, fusion, which is joining of dissimilar materials such as metal and wood, the anomalous melting without heating of metals, without burning adjacent material, spontaneous fracturing of metals, which separate by sliding in a sideways fashion, and both temporary and permanent changes in the crystalline structure and physical properties of metals. And I think really what I can then do is, hopefully we've got John on the line. John, are you there?
No, other than John Hutchison.
John, welcome
to We Ourselves.
Well, thank you, Senator. I'm on the West Coast, and hello to all you folks in Washington, D.C.
Great, John. It's great to have you. Amrose, is there anything you wanted to say to John, or shall I?
No, I want him to go ahead and talk about the Hutchinson effect and how he discovered it and its relevance.
Great. And did you hear the description I just read out, John?
Yes.
Fantastic.
That would be the text, it would think be written up in the 80s.
Okay. And what would be your comments on that? And could you expand on any points or make them a bit clearer for the listeners?
Well, I feel that there's a lot more that's been written up, of course, on the Hutchinson effect books, publications, and other scientific data. There's somebody already replicating it. And I am doing it on a smaller scale here prior to the Canadian government seizing the main lab.
Okay. And do you think that there was any sort of main things that I missed out with that description?
Spontaneous combustion fires that appear from nowhere is one of them.
Right, yes, absolutely. You've obviously been playing with this for a long time, and I know you've been through the wars, at various times with having your equipment confiscated and things like this. That I believe that's happened at least twice, is that correct?
No, main time was 1990 when I was in Europe. It was the Canadian government that took the entire laboratory and tried to make a secret operation, but the newspapers found out about it. Published the news.
Okay.
And, yeah, that was... But I've been raided before in 2000.
Okay. And one of the things that, we wanted to just check with you, that I believe it was in 1983, there was a person called John Alexander, Colonel John Alexander, in fact, who'd come to see you because he'd learned about what you were doing. I wondered if you could sort of mention a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. Colonel John Alexander was 1983. He came with a team from Los Alamos, and he said to me that we're expecting a threat from, as I recall it, a threat from the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And that was a concern for the American government. So I gave a demonstration for about 4 months working with the team. And unfortunately, there were some effects that happened, and sometimes it didn't. It seemed like the equipment was sabotaged, and I learned from yet another lieutenant colonel that a fellow by the name of Bob sabotaged the entire project. So John Alexander was a little upset over that, and he brought in another team from McDonnell Douglas to do a clear, not classified report, which I still have that report. And then after that, of course, the Canadian government did their experiments and kept it a matter of national security.
Of course. Now, I think that's, really interesting that we do know that people in the military are well aware of what you've been doing. It's not as if you have been, working away totally as like a hermit. They're fully aware of what you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, we've got to conclude that they are. I wondered if Judy wanted to ask anything and make a few points to follow on from this.
Hello. Yes, yesterday, Andrew and I were in New York City at Ground Zero, and we noticed a lot of interesting things continuing, like the fumes coming out of the ground still after this many years, and why it might not be, when does it stop? When this effect begins, why might it not stop?
Yeah, just to add to that, we understand one of the key things is that, in many cases, when you start your experiments, you can switch off the power, and the effect that you're generating will continue. We just wanted to get your comments, really, John, on that type of effect that we've seen at the World Trade Center, as Judy just mentioned.
The fuming effect.
Yeah.
Well, we're trying to do a parallel here, I believe. And when I switch off the equipment, sometimes there's metal samples that have been analyzed by the Max Planck Institute that seem to be accelerated in time, ahead in time.
Wow.
And the crystalline structures are always changing very fast, and the magnetic properties are changing extremely fast. So this is in regards to when I basically shut down the power, these samples, which are many of them, tend to alter.
Right.
Ongoing.
Okay, and I think, you know, the other thing which I wanted to really stress with this is it's something that in our research, or Judy's research really, and my looking over her shoulder, the whole energy question is one that we've been looking at. And a lot of people have said there is no, absolutely no way that directed energy could have taken down the World Trade Center towers, because the amount of energy, I think there's this figure, I don't know what it is, I think it's something like five times the total output of the Earth. And so these people say, oh, you know, there's absolutely no way that you can do that because we don't have that technology.
But gravity is enough?
Or gravity is enough. That's another group of people that say that. And, you know, I just wanted to check with you because it's very important that people, you know, understand the amount of energy that you're using in some of these experiments. And I wondered if you could address that question.
Oh, I would be happy to, sir.
Thank you.
The energy in the equipment has been measured at 100 to 400 watts. And when I was giving a demonstration for Maine News, the newscaster accidentally chopped the extension cord in half by accident and shut down the entire lab. So that's around 400 watts, the lowest power. And if I'm using more modern equipment, it's, of course, I'm up to maybe 1,000 watts energy to drive the systems and that. So I know what you're saying about directed weapons. They've been around a long, long time, actually. I was on the DOD's mailing list for exotic technologies, and some of the projects were directed energy, and as well as antimatter manufacturing.
Wow, yeah, I mean, that's something we haven't really looked at. You know, I think that, you know, we could really spend hours and hours talking about this.
There's some interesting evidence that really caught my attention about Iraq was that, if you don't mind me bringing it up.
Well, I think it's worth mentioning because that's, you know, it is interesting that we've come across some of the pictures from there. And obviously it's a very emotive topic for a lot of people and a lot of listeners. But, you know, I think I'll just mention, to sort of link up to what you just said, that we did come across some pictures from there which showed some similar effects. So, yeah, if you want to
I remember always that on mainstream news like CNN and that the Russians were running in there to retrieve all their documents on scalar weapons.
Right, right.
I remember that so clearly, but as history tends to bury everything.
Yes, I think sometimes it's difficult to get clear information, but what's certainly become clear to me, I don't know if I can speak for Dr. Wood, but there is, you know, a lot of this technology which has been completely hidden from the public, and I think matters like the one you just mentioned are actually more common than most of us want to accept or realise. But I think if we just sort of take us back to the energy question, and I think, you know, what you're looking at, for example, we've said already you're using perhaps 400, 500 watts of power, and, you know, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that you've been able to levitate a 70-pound cannonball at one time. I know this was, a few years back. Is that about right? Did I get that right?
Well, that's absolutely right. That was one thing we levitated, but hundreds, if not thousands, of things we levitated, the biggest being 1,500-pound transformer we levitated, which is a repeatable experiment, and most recently here,
wow,
about 1,000 pounds of equipment was shifted around very strong here, causing the fellow that was filming it to get sick, as well as I found out just yesterday that in two square blocks, everybody got violently ill for a second. I don't know what this all means, because I haven't had this happen before, and I had another email come in late last night about the same thing, so it's kind of scary in a way that, but I'm not ill, and nobody below me or above me is ill, but this field is known to actually go out and and disappear and reappear somewhere else, much like Tesla's experiments, the same kind of thing, where he was able to, by accident, blow out the Colorado Springs power plant 25 miles away from his tiny shed in 1900.
It's interesting you mentioned a transformer weighing 1,500 pounds. My Honda Accord, I remember, was 1,900 pounds. It's about the same.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So if you can lift a transformer, could you lift a car?
Yeah, a car. We actually lifted in part or twisted a building a little bit. Caused cracks in it.
Uh-oh.
The mayor of this city came here, and he's a couple of years ago talking with me, a friendly fellow, Mayor Wright of New Westminster, and he was talking about he's getting reports of concrete cracking up as well as citizens in distress. And it seems when I do an experiment like I did for National Geographic TV and Film, I blew out the elevator so they couldn't get their equipment down after the experiment, and just recently... for Fox TV, I was doing an experiment, and then some plumbing exploded downstairs. But I take in consideration, too, that when I was doing the McDonnell Douglas experiments, that we had a water main explode out in the street.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's written up in some of the text. I've been through a lot of mischief, and they haven't.
Yes.
They have not burned me at the stake, thank goodness.
Maybe I should tell you what you say can and will be used against you.
Well, this is a good point. Thank you. Much needed.
Well, I mean, you know, we're obviously making this public for just those sorts of reasons. And I think one point I wanted to just dwell on for a second is that, Judy and I, we watch the internet forums quite closely, and there are quite a number of people who are saying, you know, oh, John Hutchison can't reproduce the effects which he's, you know, makes. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, you know, what your response would would be. I almost feel silly asking the question, but,
Honestly, I think they don't listen to radio or watch TV or read books, because I've been doing this quite regularly for Fox TV in 2000 and onward up for Griffin Productions as well as National Geographic TV and Film, and onward with many, many different crews have come and gone out of here, and I can sit down, turn everything on, and guarantee an effect within 5 minutes.
Fantastic.
So whatever they're reading is maybe so old that they just don't bother researching. That's what I feel.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I totally agree. And I think we can clearly demonstrate without any shadow of a doubt that, you know, you've got multiple experiments filmed, as you've said, for TV companies. You've had the military come to see you. And again, just to mention the website, which we forgot to mention earlier on, it's www.drjudywood.com for the stuff that we're talking about in relation to 9/11. And John, if you want to give your own websites just now, if the listeners want to note them down.
Oh, for sure, folks. It's www.hutchisoneffect.ca.
Okay, great. And we mentioned that we took a trip to Ground Zero in New York actually yesterday, and we did film a couple of interesting things. We only had a few hours there, but even in that time, we were able to observe a few things. I think Judy was going to say a few words about that.
Yes, we even stopped at the visitor center there and met some wonderful young folks, very energetic, who were asking questions and noted the fuming and thought maybe that had to be from blasting last summer, but that didn't make sense to them. After they said it just didn't make sense. But they also noted the lack of material on 9/11 after the towers went away, and they never had a good answer for that. And I really admired them for thinking, for asking themselves what they see and what they understand. The most striking thing I can remember from yesterday is my sore throat. At various points around the complex as we walked, I'd hit a pocket of something that really made my throat hurt terribly. And we also saw puffs of fumes coming out of the ground, dirt trucks coming and going with what looked to be lush topsoil. When you drill into bedrock, why would you have wet topsoil? Surely would not be something you'd want to drive on because it'd be slippery, like muck. There was not a gravel road. It was this bright reddish-brown dirt, very lush. So they're hauling dirt in and out still. They're behind schedule. They're not down to the bottom. They go backwards. It seems to be the dirt comes in beginning of the week and gets moved out at the end of the week, and they start the next cycle all over again.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't actually see the dirt being trucked in, but they were doing various interesting things, sorting operations, it seemed to be, mixing what they were digging out of the ground with the excavator's shovel, with the kind of dirt, to kind of seem to be stirring it around. And we actually did video this, and hopefully we're going to post this video sort of hopefully within the next 24 hours. So if the listeners do go to the website and have a sort of look round there, you hopefully will find this video, and you can see one of the very interesting things that I filmed was a hosing down of a cable from a crane with a big fire hose, and it wasn't just like a squirt; it was quite a big gush of water over a few tens of seconds.
And the cable was dangling from a big crane. It wasn't laying on the ground; it was just straight dangling.
Mm. So, you know, what would be your comments on all of that, John?
Well, it seems that if that's what's going on there, it seems like there's some kind of infection of some type or something unusual happening there. Because if Judy's walking around there and getting sore throats, there's some kind of reaction or chemical reaction going on there.
Right. And Bankers Trust, as we know, had that big gash in the front, which they repaired. And then they started taking the building apart. Why would they repair it and then take the building apart? And they're still working on taking the building apart while we were there. They probably have about half of it gone. It's about 20 stories left. But there's with the beams they replaced the damaged ones with, or the missing, you know, there's just a void that had been in the middle of the building. There's a tremendous amount of rust on those brand new beams that were used to replace the old ones with.
That's not good. That means there's a reaction in the steel or in the ground there that's causing that to happen. And when that starts to happen, especially where the contacts with the welding and main bolts are, that leads to structural failure.
And across from Building 7, where they're building yet another temporary PATH train station, I think that's the fourth temporary one they've built so far, it's before the steel beams even are put in place, they're rusting. This bright orange rust, it looks like it was spray painted on, but the beams are painted green. And the PATH train entrance we walked down through, there were some new beams that were painted last summer, and they're completely rusted through. It's just tremendous. It looks like it's been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years.
Oh, those are the pictures you sent me about the beams there with the bolt?
Yes, we have some additional pictures.
They're all rust coming out of the paint.
Correct. There's paint in an abrupt area where it's just super rusty.
Oh, I saw that, and it's like if that keeps on going like that, it'll fail.
Do you have the same kind of phenomenon in your own specimens, like stainless steel that might rust?
Actually, yes. Many of our samples have turned what appeared to be like rusting, and that's stainless steel metal, high-grade stainless, and the pitting in that goes in pretty deep. And there's like a reddish, rusty color look to them.
Pretty interesting to see that in stainless steel.
Yeah. Steel, like we've had many, many different kinds of metal samples that would be even flaking apart. And those are the ones that seem to be going ahead in time.
I think we have some pictures of those on the new series that's up on my website.
Like we made hundreds, if not thousands, of metal samples over the years. And they're deposited in Germany, Japan, Los Alamos, of course, U.S. Pentagon, I believe, as well as in Toronto, Canada. And I gave away a number of them as gifts, too. And they're being always analyzed, tested, and that. I got about 500 pounds, I think, here.
Wow. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, we've got all the evidence, the physical evidence that you mentioned there. It's all around the world. You certainly haven't kept it secret. And I think, you know, that brings us on to a couple of points as well. One is that I know, for example, some people have said to you, you know, oh, John, this is incredible, which it is, of course. Why haven't you patented this? And I just wondered, you know, why?
Well, I'm not interested in patents or even proving it. What I'm doing is replicating old technology, basically.
Okay.
And even my team said, well, how can you patent an effect? But what I like doing, actually, is not to gain all this, like, patents and all that on the free energy device I'm working on, or the levitation. What I like doing is inspiring kids out there when I do these experiments through the television people and that. And that's
right.
The premise of my new upcoming network TV show that they are working on right now. It's different episodes we'll be covering are pretty fantastic and pretty demanding, and we have a fairly good team. We'll be doing the levitation as well as trying to replicate the Philadelphia experiment.
And interesting.
Some of the time experiments that were done on the South Pole.
I think we will have to leave the listeners to explore those topics. They are very, very interesting, though. Mm. And I think, just to go back, sorry, you were going to say about the energy duty.
When might that series be out where folks will be able to see it?
Well, we had a meeting, phone conference, actually, a couple of days ago. Now, our main sponsors are going to start working on something. A proposal is supposed to be in maybe this day. A draft of something.
But neat.
Our producer's been working on this, or producers have been working on this for a number of years. It looks like it's going to come to reality. So I'll be doing a lot of different things, as well as my partner, and be more media exposure for it, and hopefully it will inspire the kids, the next generation of inventors, scientists, and that, to go out and explore. That's
terrific.
The theme of what I'm doing, so that's why I'm really not into patents.
Terrific. And yeah, the idea of getting energy out there free, or nearly free and clean, and this
well,
so many
know,
things to be discovered with it.
So much, Judy. I mean, one of the main energy sources is what they call zero-point energy in a cubic. This is for those people with the energy problem. A cubic foot of it can power the Earth's energy needs for 100 years. And that is not my statement, but reputable science, Nobel Prize scientists like Richard P. Feynman and others I know out there.
And so there's no reason we should be paying $3 or $4 a gallon for gasoline.
No, and there's already a patent on a zero-point energy collector. 1996. Epic, because it was the first one ever accepted by the U.S. Patent Office.
Well, I wonder if there's any callers. Do you think we should take callers?
Well,
yeah.
let's go now to the telephone. Callers have been patient. Caller, you're on. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
You're on.
Yes. Okay, I have two questions.
Go right in.
Okay. How about, I looked over Dr. Judy Wood's website and also looked over the YouTube photos and video for for Mr. Hutchison also, and it's very impressive. But one of my questions is, how about, as far as the World Trade Center is concerned, how about a network of directed energy devices planted inside the towers, not fired like a gun into or at the Twin Towers from some other place. That could explain some of the non-uniform effects that are described by Dr. Judy Wood. And also, what about a network of directed energy devices that are planted inside the towers using the World Trade Center Plaza's own existing radio frequencies as leverage or catalyst, or as a jumping off point for reactions that eventually brought down each tower?
Okay. Now, just for myself.
Excellent questions. Thank you so much.
Sorry, thank you very much. Sorry to interrupt. this is a very difficult question to answer, and I can't really answer it, but I'm sure John can give a few ideas and thoughts on that. But just what I would say is I think it's very, very difficult to answer those sorts of questions accurately, because we don't, you know, we don't really have the evidence to kind of work with. We can just look at the photographic record. But certainly I think that was some interesting ideas, and perhaps I can pass over to John. I assume you heard that okay, John?
Yes, I did. That's an interesting idea. There was a lot of interesting research on one directed weapon called the BASER, a Boson Directed Energy Unit. But Dr. Yale at UCLA, and that was a number of years ago, too.
Your voice is fading.
You need to get close to
speak
the phone,
John. Louder. Your voice is fading.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe it's just the lines. But, yes, it was... I've seen some of these things in reality. Ion cannons.
Wow. Okay. Ambrose?
Yeah, go ahead.
And I think we're going to go to the next caller now, then.
Okay.
Yes,
you're
good
on,
morning.
Colin.
How are you?
Good, and you?
Good. Glad to hear your voice, Ambrose.
Oh, thanks.
There has been much discussion on the steel beam, mainly the temperature at which the steel would melt or even weaken, so that a collapse would occur. The heat from the aviation fuel would not be sufficient to weaken or melt steel, as far as I understand. What is the temperature at which steel is harmed or weakened, and can you dispel this whole idea that the fires led to the Twin Towers collapse? Judy?
The temperature at which steel melts doesn't seem to be very relevant when we're talking about molecular dissociation. There's a variety of ways in which you can take things apart, or cause material to change state. Heat is one of them, and that's about the most inefficient way of doing it. We see from the photographs, I think we all are familiar with those pictures of people running down the street with the cloud chasing them. After the cloud passed, we didn't see any cooked bodies. We don't have any reports of people being burned up. It was not hot. Actually, there are reports that the cloud was initially a little bit cooler than the ambient temperature. So there's a different process going on.
Okay, hopefully that answers the question. And perhaps we can go to the next caller.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yep.
Okay, I got a couple of questions on to Dr. Philbert there. What happened to the people on the plane if a plane didn't hit this building? Where did they disappear to? You talk all this science fiction gobbledygook, which to me seems totally incomprehensible, but what happened to the plane? What happened to the people on the plane? If a plane didn't hit this building, where did the people go on the plane?
I think we're talking about molecular dissociation here and what happened to the World Trade Center buildings and about this technology.
Okay, they're going to answer your question. Go ahead.
We're not really talking about that issue. That's a different set of evidence, and there are some other studies that have been done on the internet regarding the issue with planes, which does tie into this at some level, but we'd really like to spend the time on now that we've got John here to talk about those effects. So I'm sorry to sort of put that on one side, but if we could go to the next caller.
But we should answer that question as best we can.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are asking the same question.
Oh, what happened to the people on the plane?
Yeah, what happened to the plane?
You know, we don't even know if there was a plane. That hasn't been determined. And the people can disappear a variety of ways. There's not just one way of disappearing people.
If you want me to give my honest answer, I regard it as a separate matter. I didn't mean to brush the caller off. I did do a study on some of the witness accounts from the first responders from New York City, and they, if you read what they said about the actual planes, and they were there when the second plane hit, you get some very, very interesting accounts. Also, again, you look at the physical evidence we have got. For example, we've got a rubber tire on the sidewalk under some scaffolding, or very near some scaffolding, and how can a rubber tire survive a fireball? And there's several other pieces of physical evidence like that, and I particularly think that if the media can create a story about Al-Qaeda, they can create a story about some passengers getting onto planes. I don't think that's particularly difficult, but there's a lot of information to work through before, you know, you can say a lot of these statements with confidence. And again, look at the evidence and think for yourself. The same rule applies.
One thing I found interesting is after the second tower got the plane-shaped hole in it, about that time, one of the first responders was talking about cars on fire, and I went out looking and actually found the pictures of those cars on fire. And it was not a normal fire. There was no smoke coming from the fire, just spontaneous combustion of the cars. And here are firefighters walking through such a fire that doesn't appear to be hot.
There are a lot of people in those buildings. What happened to their bodies?
Well, again, looking at some of the witness accounts, which was a separate study to some of the material effects with the Hutchison effect, we have one account of one of the people in one of the buildings seeing his friends actually, I believe, what was the word, Judy, that he used?
Many of them that disappeared. There was a firefighter in Building 6 off in the corner, and his buddies were like an arm's reach away, and they disappeared along with the building. In the middle of the building just disappeared.
And also we have the doctors.
In other words, no bodies were left.
No bodies, no nothing. No computers, I believe, were ever found.
And the doctors, Judy, we have the video clip of the doctors describing the bodies coming into the hospital, or not coming into the hospital.
Right. There's you know, where are the bodies? What happened to the bodies? And they're at a loss because there are no bodies. There are no injured that need help.
Yeah, they have a certain number came in, and then they were expecting a huge number to come in, and then following that, there were none.
Mm-hmm. It's very important to respond to our listener.
Sure.
Because a lot of people don't have that information, that
right.
There were no bodies.
Okay.
Yeah. Good morning, caller. How are you today?
Hi, Ms. Lane. How are you?
And great.
To your guests. Quick, I guess, example, something, food for thought. First of all, the question that the gentleman just asked in this entire dialogue about the entire processes that happened September 11, 2001 are difficult enough, in my opinion, in a vacuum or in a perfect society to consider all those things. But considering the political climate and other things, that sort of adds, unfortunately, a lot of elements that are, well, just with that word, unfortunate. I have to consider other things because of the political climate. That being said, since I was a child, and this conversation was a lot easier for me when I was a child, I thought more open-mindedly, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still retain a lot of that, and that's where my energy comes from. At 55, I'm getting younger and stronger every day. But really mm-hmm. quickly, I just want to make this point. When I've considered since childhood how the pyramids were built, and we've considered those different documentaries over a period of 30, 40 years since I've looked at that, and this situation with the World Trade Center, and I consider what I've always thought of as a child as unlimited energy that is available that may be in neither time nor space, if you will. Quick example is when a plane flies, they found during jet technology, because of the war or whatever process, that when you turned or veered off of your course, a direct course, depending on your speed, G-force was increased, right? Now, if we call that energy, in theory, there is unlimited energy depending on your speed and direction. You could go straight ahead at 1,000 miles an hour, stop on a dime, and go the back way. Whatever's in that plane would be crushed because of the G-force. So my perspective, again, food for thought, is I've always considered that there was some way to direct unlimited energy to do things, move things. And again, I consider the pyramids. Why can't we do that? Maybe we can. Maybe we don't know the technique. But are you, do you understand where I'm going with this? I see and I've felt this. I can't explain it in the interest of time so other folks can get on. But there is something that I've always considered, and you are touching upon a lot of it, unlimited energy which can be directed if you know how. That's easy to say that. But do you understand what I'm saying? There's
sure,
unlimited energy available in the universe.
Sure. I think the best person to comment on that would be John, if John's still there. John?
Very good. John Hutchinson.
Well, there's been a lot of research into the zero-point energy, tapping into it and using it to power systems. And that, I mean, a cubic foot of that is equal to powering the Earth's energy needs for 100 years. And actually, it's called the Casimir effect. If people want to search out that type of information, it goes way, way back in time. And already there's a patent on a device in 1996 for a collection of zero-point energy to be used. And oddly enough and interestingly enough, IBM has bought up all the patent rights to that. And I've had my own experiences with building these machines myself when they would suddenly go up to 75,000 volts and turn into a dangerous situation.
Yeah. I was just sort of add to the tail end of that a person that John and I both know, Nick Cook, he has looked at this zero-point energy and how it ties into the anti-gravity and levitation effects. And going back to the pyramids, who knows, you know, what they had then? Did they have access to this sort of technology? Another interesting topic for people just to quickly look at is Coral Castle in Florida, which was built by Edward Leed Skarnin. That's a very interesting story, which I won't dwell on here, but a lot of people have linked that with the construction of the pyramids. I don't know if you've heard about that, John.
Oh, yes, I have, actually.
Sure.
That was a topic brought up on Coast to Coast. And also a lady friend of mine was giving me information on it. Very intriguing place, really fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe we can go to the next caller.
Good morning, Colin. How are you today?
Hey, what's going on, Ambrose?
Hey, now. What are your questions?
I was going to just go on one of the earlier callers. Just the way that I see, the way I see life, man, is, you know, if he really knew the true nature of reality and the world that he live in around you, you would really know. In reality, man, it's really no such thing as science fiction, really.
That's
anyway, amazing. Y'all have a good day.
Okay.
Thank you. I think that's a very good point.
Good morning, caller.
Yes, hello.
You're on.
I just wanted to make a comment that, and how you doing, Ambrose?
Oh, pretty good.
Listen, all this I'm hearing, I've heard this on Art Bell, and I just want to tell the callers in D.C. that if you want to know the covert, underhanded stuff that the government's doing, the Air Force and all that, to listen to Art Bell. But what I wanted to also say is that once the government unveils all of their hidden, you know, stuff, we will still be slaves. Hmm. And we will still be under the thumb of this technology. So I just, you know, saying, yes, it's amazing, but we need to have our own science kit so we can make our own spaceships and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I had a question in regards to the topic this morning as far as the concept that was delineated earlier, is that related to continuous electron beam acceleration to the metallurgy assay of the steel understructure of the building? And three, could you elucidate on the cooling effect that you mentioned with the cloud of dust in the aftermath, or do you think that may have just been the internal temperature of the building being amplified at the ground level? Those are my questions.
Well, I don't know really how to answer that in terms of the technical aspects of the electron beam or technology that you referred to. It's not something I can answer. Maybe John would like to comment, and Judy then maybe about the dust cloud. John?
Oh, yes. Sorry about that. I thought Judy was going to... Well, there's particle beam weaponry and various types.
Speak up a little louder.
Yeah, I guess the line is fading here a bit. There's, like, a lot of research into particle beam weaponry, directed energy weapons, as well as devices to turn material into, like, dust. And, like, it's interesting about the cloud, and there's been reports in scientific data on temperature drops and this kind of, like, effects in that.
Okay.
I have it in writing and documentation form.
Oh, that you have seen that before.
I've come across that literature in books, and when we test our samples, when you run in there right away and perhaps grab it, it's like ice cold.
Wow.
Yes, no heat involved.
I was wondering if some of the energy comes out of the object, and that's why it cools.
A valid point. It's like a scientist I know who mentioned that when a woman lifts a car off her child, let's say the temperature drops all around her. That's getting into the parapsychological stuff, which is very... A lot of research is going on right now into that region of parapsychology and energy.
Wow. So like, that's where the energy might be coming from, is the surrounding area.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Neat.
I've come across that literature on the drop in temperature in various topics like that. And I felt it myself, like a cold, cold wind. And oddly enough, we used to keep, in the hot summer, keep cool by this cold wind.
Ooh. I have read some of the transcripts of the first responders who, when the buildings went away, have described their temperature being cooler.
That's interesting. And then I would fall in the categories of some of the researchers I know that are doing interesting things and taking measurements in that.
So interesting, the similarities and consistencies.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Okay, so maybe we can go to the next caller.
Good morning.
Hello?
You're on.
Oh, okay. How you doing, everybody?
Fine, thank you. Great.
Well, my comment is this. We know that the Pentagon is the one agency, if you want to call that, in the government, that never seems to have its budget cut, yet they're the one agency that can't ever account for how all the money is being spent. So maybe... We know where it's going now.
I think that's an absolutely valid point. And I believe it was September the 10th, 2001, there was an announcement that I think some like $1 trillion had gone missing and they couldn't do their accounts to work out where it had gone. I believe that question was also posed by Cynthia McKinney at some point after September the 11th. And John, I believe that you had dealings with the Pentagon at some level. Maybe you just want to mention that briefly.
Well, I have a fan club there. I'm not kidding. My video was shown there a couple of years ago, and I got a standing ovation from 400 officers. But I imagine the money that's gone missing is really just black ops. That's the secret government scientists and folks. Like, I was a member of that for a short time, and it's cash under the table and secret projects that I feel have to be done, or else it might get caught, you know, with a big problem. But it's mostly black ops stuff. And, you know, it's a huge industry, the military-industrial complex, and in the USA and also in the Soviet Union and other locations. So a lot of money is pumped into such things.
Yep.
And unaccountable money, of course, is the black operations folks.
Absolutely, and it's something that Eisenhower warned about in 1961 in his leaving address.
Yeah. Good morning, caller. Oh, pretty good.
And your guest, how are you this morning?
Fine, thank you very much.
Yes, I'm kind of amazed at the nonchalant attitude everybody's taken about this crime of unimaginable proportions perpetrated upon American people and the world. I'm saying that this type of crime was so horrible and so shocking that most of the people are still in a mass hypnotic type state. I am thinking that these revelations that we're hearing this morning should have the people so excited and so outraged enough that they should be flooding the lines to their congressmen and the newspapers and trying to get this message out as the number one story of the year, that maybe we'll prompt some kind of investigations so that we can get to the truth behind who's responsible, and so we can bring some closure to these families of the victims, you know, because they never got satisfaction for what happened when the government had its own self investigated for these crimes, and then blame these crimes on other people, and we got hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people dying all over the world now because of this deception perpetrated upon American people in the world. I mean, I'm so outraged, I'm almost breathless. But my question is, why are we not being instructed on how we can bring some more attention to this problem and contact other people that we may bring this to the forefront and get into some kind of investigations?
Well, we're going to tell you that. We're going to package these two shows and make it available so you can have meetings at your house, meetings in your neighborhood, where you can reveal it to a lot of more people than are hearing it now.
Well, thank you, Ambrose. That was obviously absolutely wonderful as far as we're concerned. And I'm glad the caller has reminded us, you know, very well of why we're here. And really, you know, my ability here is just to share the information and try and explain it. I've been, you know, making discs, giving out discs, speaking to people, giving out leaflets. Everyone can try and do at least some of those tasks, you know, continually. So, you know, that's one of the things we can do. As you know, Dr. Wood and Dr. Reynolds have got the legal cases and the challenges to NIST. Anybody who's listening in this area who has, you know, legal skills and wants to take this up, I'm sure, you know, if you contact Dr. Ward or Dr. Reynolds and want to start your own legal action, I think that will be possible. And also, really, one of the things I strongly wanted to say, and I'm glad the caller again has reminded me, if there is anybody listening who knows anything about what we're talking about, take some action. You know, if they're on the inside and they're listening and they want change, then make the change. You know, help make the change. We're just ordinary citizens, you know, and particularly me being in the UK, I'm even more out on a limb. So, really, you know, it's up to us to take whatever action we can. We can't rely on government agencies to do it for us because we've been doing that for 6 years, and I think, as the caller pointed out very well again, nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one last call. Call, you're on.
Hi, good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
And your guests. My question is, I've seen on television that the Army is touting a weapon that they have. When they point it at individuals, they get so hot, they drop whatever they're doing, and they run away. And I was wondering how this relates to what your guests are discussing now. Thank you.
I believe you're talking about the active denial system, what they're calling. That it causes people, it's like if you put your hand on the burner of a stove, you're not going to think about it. Your hand's just going to be taken off of it. And making people feel that they're burning up makes them move a particular direction. Mm-hmm. They don't even get to think about it. They just run the other way. And there's going to be more and more things like that, I believe, that we'll be seeing.
And Judy, you know, it's not a new technology. Some of the other experiments done in the 40s were infrasound, and some of the people actually died from that machine. Discontinued, but maybe reincorporated in another project, but that was a long time ago. But interesting stuff. I mean,
John, you're fading on me again. I will give each one of you a minute to wrap up. We'll start with Hutchison. Speak loudly.
Aye, sir. Yeah, the line sends goes down. Well, it's been a pleasure to be on your show, and I'd love to see the entire mystery of 911, the most horrible day I ever encountered in my life.
Yeah.
To be solved and resolution for everybody, really. And the truth, the main thing is the truth.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, I feel. It's the whole truth, what really happened, presented in a proper way and looked at. And thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for being with us and joining us. Andrew?
Well, thank you again, Ambrose. Thank you to John very much for coming on and, I think, discussing which is something which is very difficult, particularly for John in his situation. We're very grateful indeed to John for everything he's done to help us in the last few weeks in kind of building up to this radio appearance. And again, I'd just like to reiterate, we are at a juncture now where we have the access to the energy technology. We don't need most of the, if not all of the energy sources that we use at the moment are out of date, they're obsolete. The sort of technology that John has been doing his bit to bring to the world and get them interested in, we all need to, you know, bring that to the attention of the officials the best we can. And if they don't do anything about it, then we're going to have to make a different plan, whatever that is. That really, again, copy the discs, get the DVDs, get the information, discuss it, share it, ask questions. That would be my closing comments.
Thanks so much, Judy. Dr. Judy Wood.
There's a friend of mine who quotes Robert Weir, I forgot the other person who coined this phrase, "The future is here, we're it, we're on our own." It's up to us to see to it that we do continue to have a future. And I think it's important to us to think for ourselves and not be herded, but to open our eyes and just look at what we see, what we think, what we feel. And I'd also like to thank John for coming on the show today, as well as Andrew. It's been great.
And thanks to you, Judy, as well, for everything you've done. It's been, you know, historic, really.
Thanks to all three of you. And we are so we're so grateful that you've decided to share this information with the general public. We're going to make sure that these 2 hours, last Friday and today, are made available to the people so that the people can share it and act in their own best interest. Thank you once again. This has been We Ourselves. I'm Ambrose Eileen Sr. We'll see you again on Friday. Take care.